Down the Dunk Podcast.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Down to Dunk Podcast. It is August 8th. Summer is winding down. I can't believe it. I want to remind you, as we do every time we get on, that you can follow us on Twitter at DDD Podcast. Look for us online at downtodunk.com. You can also follow us as part of SB Nation's Welcome to Loud City. With us today is one of our favorite interviewees, I guess, or interviewers, Steven or Steve McPherson from Minnesota. You can follow him on Twitter at Steventrist. He's from Rolling Stone, Grantland, A Wolf Among Wolves, Hardwood, Paroxysm, The Classical Complex. He's got all sorts of things on his Twitter feed, but follow him out there and you can get some information about all sorts of things. And he is our Minnesota Timberwolves guy. He lives there in Minneapolis. Or St. Paul, I don't know. Are they the same city? I'm very confused by that.
They're not the same city. There are two different. I've lived in both cities. I live in Minneapolis right now.
Lives in Minneapolis right now. And so obviously we're going to talk a lot during this podcast about the Kevin Love trade. And then we'll talk a little bit about Thunder. But before, I feel like every time that we have this conversation, I just have to ask you, because you're my musical guru that I follow, what are you listening to right now?
As soon as you started that sentence, I knew that was the question that was coming, and I'm like, I'm scrambling. Here's the problem. Essentially, I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, so a lot of what I listen to is the Okie Dokie Brothers.
So it's still that stuff. All right.
Well, I do want to put in a plug for the Okie Dokie Brothers, though, because they are actually awesome, and they are – it's kids' music. Excuse me. It's kids music, technically. You know, it's made with kids in mind, but they're this duo. They're from Minnesota. Well, they're from Colorado, but they live in Minnesota, and they have a couple records out. One, they canoed down the Mississippi River and wrote songs. The other, they hiked on the Appalachian Trail and wrote songs. And it's a lot of like bluegrass folk stuff, and the songs are just actually fun. Like, they're good sing-along songs in the car. Like, even I wouldn't go so far as to say if you don't have kids, like, hey, check them out. But certainly if you're used to the a lot of the crappy kids music that's out there, then they're pretty worth checking out. I'm sure I have something else that I could recommend. I've been listening to a lot of Chris Whitley lately. I don't know if you know about Chris Whitley. He was a guitarist and singer who died a number of years ago, and had a bunch of really great records, the best of which I think is probably Dirt Floor. Plays Dobro, or a National Steel, actually, amplified. On Dirt Floor, it's actually acoustic, and it's very stripped down and raw. And he writes terrific songs, sort of in a bluesy Americana vein. But I saw him live a bunch of times, a fantastic performer. And some of his albums are very sort of experimental and rock and weird. Den of Ecstasy is kind of like that. His debut, Living with a Law, is kind of the most mainstream sounding. Dirt Floor is very stripped down, as I said, but I sort of made this little mix on Spotify of Chris Whitley stuff that I've been really enjoying recently. So that's my recommendation.
The Okie Dokie Brothers and Chris Whitley. I love it. I really am gonna check out the Okie Dokie Brothers.
You really should. They're super great guys. Like, we got to meet them. We went to a show a little while ago. We got to meet them. They're really nice and they're a lot of fun. And they got some good tunes.
And I'm already getting over listening to the Lego movie soundtrack, Frozen. So,
sure. Well, good. This is another good option.
This is good. I'll enjoy it, I think, myself as well. So, well, let's talk. Obviously, this week, Kevin Love gets traded to the Cavaliers for Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, and 2015 protected pick, first-round pick. I want to talk just kind of broad all the way down to narrow, kind of what is the feel in Minnesota about this move?
I thought we were talking about the Mo Williams signing. That's why I thought I was here. But,
Okay. We'll go to that one next.
I think it can be a little bit – sometimes I recognize that as someone who covers the Wolves in at least a semi-professional capacity, who's a credentialed writer, my perspective – can often be very different from the fan base as a whole's perspective. But I follow a lot of people on Twitter who are you know, season ticket holders or fans. And I think the thing is, deal, Love Leaving, has been coming. You know, it's been coming for quite a while now. I think along the way, there's been, you know, good games and good moments and questions about whether something could turn around or not. But I think that ultimately this is a move that benefits the Wolves in terms of giving them probably the best package they could have hoped for, as a team that should be looking to, you know, turn in some direction, as opposed to trying to sort of, you know, roll along and hope that they can build on what, you know, last season was their best finish, in, you know, I think at least 6 or 7 years, and roll that into a playoff appearance. Like, I don't think that should be their goal right now. I think that they, you know, they're bringing in a lot of good, interesting young pieces, see how these guys work together, see who starts to pan out and sort of, you know, take some time to figure out what direction the team is going in. And it's a move that improves the Cavs, because I think that Love is a unique and amazing player who deserves to play alongside people who are going to complement him really well. And there's ways in which, you know, certain players on the Wolves complimented Love, but it just didn't seem like it was coming together. So I think getting to play with LeBron and Kyrie Irving is going to be great for him. I think teams like the Warriors, who didn't want to move Klay Thompson for him, are going to be kicking themselves, you know, a couple of years down the line when they see what he can do, you know, depend in a different kind of situation. So that's, you know, I think it's a good move for everybody. I've said to a couple people that I think the texture of it is a little bit like, you know, a personal relationship that's sort of gone south, and then, you know, you can sort of hang on to it for a while and see if it turns around. But, you know, when it's over, there might be a certain amount of pain about, you know, leaving it behind, which I think a lot of people are going to feel, as they sort of really think about what Kevin Love did while he was here and some of the great stuff that he gave the Timberwolves franchise. But it's really, it couldn't have been saved. Like, it wasn't really going to turn around. So it's time to move on and, you know, get back out there on the single scene and hit the bars and, you know, chat up some 19-year-olds, I guess. That sounds terrible. But you know what I'm saying? Like it's time, you know, I think it was just a relationship that had run its course, and hanging on to it for longer was not going to turn it around. Sometimes it's just the way it goes, you know?
So is there maybe a sense of relief a little bit, would you say, as far as, you know, okay, now it's over, now we see what we've got? Because it was, I think you're right in saying that we all kind of in the back of our mind knew it was going to happen.
Yeah. No, I think there's definite relief from the fan base. I certainly, a number of people I, you know personally have sort of felt like, you know, it's been dragged out. I mean, I wouldn't say it was like a certainty that Love was, I would say as late as the beginning of this season, I think it wasn't a certainty that Love was going to go. I think that this past season, you know, if things had broken a little differently for them early on, you know, I've been reading a lot of stuff that's been written on it from, you know, Bill Simmons and Andrew Sharp at Grantline, who both have interesting and worthwhile takes to read over there on what this deal means, both in terms of Wiggins and Love. But, you know, the Wolves had this stretch that started out from the beginning of the season through, you know, January, where they were like, you know, 1-11 or 1-12 or something in games decided by fewer than 4 points. And it's one of those things where I think if that early, they ended up like 9-22 or something in those games, which is still terrible. But it's like, if that early streak hadn't broken that way, like if they just split those results, I think that carried a lot of negative momentum for them into the second half of the season. And I think the second half of the season might have looked a lot different. They could have easily finished, if not, you know, in the playoffs, at least over 500, and possibly even made that eighth seed in the playoffs. And that would have changed things a lot. And I think that, you know, their starters were very good. Their starters were very good together, especially including Kevin Love. If they could have made moves to shore up the bench, they could have, I'm not saying that they would have been, you know, contenders next season, but they might have, you know, it might be, not that it's delaying Kevin Love's departure, but it might have been a real reason for Kevin Love to stick around if things had worked out differently. But once the season got off to that rough start, you know, I think that Adelman was a coach who wanted to win when he came in. He had this window to do that, and various things from the lockout to, you know, Kevin Love's injuries the next season to Ricky Rubio's injuries, just sort of, it was tough. And when this past season started badly, I think he just didn't really, you know, he had personal problems as well. You know, his wife's health was a major concern, and I think he just didn't have the drive, I mean, that's, I don't want to sell him short. I mean, the guy's, in his upper 60s, I believe, it's like, it's a long career that he's had. I just think he wasn't going to like turn around and try to be like, I'm going to turn this team around after this bad start. So I think in that sense, the tail end of the season felt like it was dragging on. And I think that the fan base is happy to see a new start. And some of them are going to take it as a chance to slag on Kevin Love and his contributions to the franchise, which I don't think is very fair. I think everybody should just get the chance to move on and be happy. I think anybody has the right to decide not to work for an organization that they don't feel has treated them the way that they want to be treated. And I think that's the way that Kevin Love felt. So, I think everybody's moving into better situations overall. And I'm looking forward to the Wiggins era. So,
yeah. And that's maybe just kind of my next question. I feel like Minnesota got a good trade out of this. How do you feel about that trade on Minnesota's end?
It's, time's going to tell how it pans out. I mean, trades are very, it's one thing that's difficult is I've been talking to a lot of people and people are like, there's also this rumor that Thad Young might be coming to the Wolves. There's some reports from Philly that say he's being moved for Bennett as part of this deal. Some say that Bennett is not involved, in which case maybe they're moving that, the pick they're getting from Cleveland plus, expiring contracts, depending on what Philly wants to do, And people are like, well, is there any chance that Thad Young, re-ups with Minnesota? I was like, is there any chance that this player who's not even on the team re-ups with a team that we haven't even ever seen play with a coach who hasn't coached the team before? It's one of these things where it's like, I don't think the chances are I think it's a small chance. Like, I think Thad has seemed to make his Thad, like, he's my buddy. He's not my buddy. Like, Young has made it known that he's not enjoying being part of a rebuild and, with the Sixers. But if Wiggins is suddenly, like a phenom, and he just blows everybody out of the water, if LaVine looks great, and then, maybe if the Wolves make one of those surprising runs, sort of like the Nuggets did in the wake of moving Carmelo, I could see Young re-upping, It's
sure.
It's one of those things where I think that the trade is, it's just hard to tell, but if the trade pans out the way that we think it's going to pan out, with Wiggins looking amazing, if Bennett is still part of the Wolves and he looks like he's in shape and ready to play this season, which I think a lot of his problems last season were related to coming back from injury and sleep apnea, which is a thing. He had surgery in the offseason to remove his adenoids and tonsils to help with that problem. So he looks more ready to play basketball. If he looks good, then that's a steal. If they still keep that first rounder, that's fantastic. If they end up with Young somehow as a sort of veteran presence to help shore up the starters, like, this trade's going to go down as looking better than, what Utah got for Deron Williams or what, the Nuggets got for Carmelo. Like, it would be a great haul if that's the case. And if it doesn't pan out, then, you're not horribly damaged by having to pay, a bunch of guys who seem promising, like in the, I guess the rookie salary goes up to like $7 million in the last year, but I think that might be a team option, or, there's various things about rookies, like extending their contracts and stuff like that changes. But you're talking about paying guys somewhere between like $5 and $7 million for the next couple of years. That's less than they're paying Brewer. It's less than they're paying Martin. It's like, it's not a huge risk. So either way, I think it's one of the better hauls, and I like it a lot better than, as much as I like Taj Gibson and I like Jimmy Butler and Mirotić looks interesting in Chicago, I like it better than that, because I think we just, any of those guys has a lower ceiling than Wiggins. They probably have a higher floor right now, but,
sure.
I'm all for, swinging for the fences. That's what I think.
And the question we had always about this, how does Flip Saunders, who's both GM and coach, like, you have those mixed emotions on what you want to do with the team. Like, when now is probably the higher priority to a coach, but when in the future is something the GM can kind of think of. And so this is something that sets them up. I mean, they'll be fun to watch. They'll fill the stadium this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that'll be a big turnaround. That's one of the things, that's one of the under talked about things in terms of this, that, the Wolves, in spite of getting better the last several seasons, their attendance has gone down, which is, I'm not a marketing guy, at least not sports wise. I mean, I do PR for a record label, but that's a whole different game. So, in terms of marketing the team to Minnesotans, for whatever reason, they were like 26th or 27th in attendance this season, I think, even though they had the best season they'd had in 6 or 7 years. So I think it is one of those things where a move like this is going to bring people back to the arena. You know, the Target Center is also up for renovation coming up this, I think it's this year or next year. They should be, they're doing some work on it. So, you know, like, I think that the, it's hopefully something that, that makes, you know, the Wolves like an, a marquee attraction in the Twin Cities. I mean, it's still going to be like a Twins and Vikings town primarily, but there's not a ton that you can do about that. I just think that it will be a fun team. I think that there are certain ways in which Love didn't quite connect with the Minnesota fan base. I just talked to Zach Harper, also from Wolf Among Wolves for CBS Sports about this. And I wrote about it for True Hoop towards the end of last season. But just that, you know, the Minnesota fan base's experience of a superstar was Kevin Garnett. And Kevin Garnett had that everybody get on my back kind of mentality, like I'm dragging us into the playoffs. And yeah, they had a bunch of first round exits, but it was like his supporting cast was, if you go back and look at some of those teams, it's ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, he had this whole like, get with me, I'm going to do whatever it takes. Like Kevin Love is not built like that. And that's not a knock on Kevin Love. It's just like, he's, you know, he's a lead by example, you know, quiet, not so vocal guy. When he is vocal, sometimes he tends to seem to put his foot in his mouth a lot of times. It's like, and I think the Minnesotans like just didn't know what to do with that. And so, sure, you know, like, I think that maybe, I mean, who knows what Wiggins is going to be like, but, you know, Levine is really charismatic. Like, he's a lot of fun already, obviously on the court, but also off the court. Like, one of my favorite moments from the press conference where they were announcing Levine and Robinson is somebody asked Robinson, somebody asked the rookies about what they knew about each other's game. And Glenn Robinson, the third, said, I hadn't really had a chance to get to know Zach, but, you know, we worked out together in Chicago and I got to see his game and it's impressive and he's athletic, but it's more than just that. He really knows how to play basketball. And I think he's going to be great for this team. And they went to Zach and Zach was like, oh, thanks, bro. Like, he's like a fun guy. And I think he'll be fun to have on the team. And in some ways, I think it's nice that he doesn't have to be the marquee rookie now. In a lot of ways, like Wiggins takes a lot of pressure. I mean, Wiggins will take a lot of pressure on as a marquee rookie, but, you know, there's a different set of expectations now. Like, if anybody was hoping that Levine was going to be the addition that, you know, helped out a Kevin Love led team into the playoffs, like, that's not the expectation anymore. It's like, we know this is going to be a young team that's going to struggle, but is also going to throw up a lot of alley-oops and, you know, a lot of fun stuff that way. So, yeah, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited for the talent they're going to put out there this year.
And I also, it feels kind of like this is Bennett's rookie year too, really. Like, last year, such a catastrophe with him. And yeah. I mean, some of it can fall, you know, obviously the sleep apnea, those issues, the shape stuff, but there's also part of it that he wasn't in a system where he could actually be successful. And,
and
that's the interesting thing. I think it'll be big for him. And then who knows what Shabazz Muhammad's going to bring. I don't know anything about him. And then I think Gorgui is, I mean, he's got incredible ability and talent.
Yes.
And so the future is very bright, and especially if just Wiggins or Bennett turns into something, Minnesota's going to be fun for a decade, it feels like.
Yeah, no, I think that you're looking at a team with, you know, and even Rubio. Rubio has only been in the league for 3 years. Peck's been in for four. He's older because he came over, you know, later from Europe. But, you know, Jang is – you know, is going to be a sophomore this year. You've got a bunch of good rookies. I mean, this is one of the reasons I'm sort of advocating for Thad Young, like whether or not Bennett is involved, because I think he brings, I mean, he has as much experience in the NBA as Rubio and Peck put together. He has 7 years of experience, but he's still only 26 years old. So, you know, I think that, and I think he could actually be a really good mentor for Shabazz Muhammad. They, in a lot of ways, they have sort of similar games. Shabazz is a little smaller than Thad Young, but they're both undersized for their positions, essentially. And they're both physically they're sort of both broad chested. They, you know, Thad does a lot of good work down on the post, and that's actually where Shabazz is most comfortable, which is a little unusual for a small forward. So, you know, there could be a good mentorship that happens there if that kind of thing goes on. I mean, I think that, and again, you're right. I think that if you have a bunch of, you have three, if you have Bennett, Levine and Wiggins together, you have three rookies who all have a lot of upside. If only one of them, you know, turns into something like a star level player, then you're looking at something great. And if the other guys are complementary to that, then that's fantastic. If two of them turn out to be, you know, stars in some sense, then that would be amazing. So
absolutely. Well, let's flip a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about kind of your analysis of the Cavs, because they're going to be good. That's just a no-brainer. But I'm intrigued to see the biggest question mark that everybody's just kind of washing over, I think, is how does Kyrie Irving function where he's not the guy? Because he is a ball-dominant point guard in the sense that, you know, he's a scoring point guard. He does all the things. And now, granted, you have the best passing power forward and the best passing small forward on your teams now. But what do you think the Cavs, how does that transition for them look?
You know, the thing about Irving, which is encouraging about it, is that, I think he'll have to adapt his game, obviously, a bunch. And that could be a struggle for him. Or it can go well because, I mean, honestly, one of the nice things is that you're putting him with two stars, neither of whom, I mean, LeBron James is great with the ball in his hands. I mean, he played a lot of point forward essentially for the Heat, and you would still ask him to do a lot of work in that respect. But neither LeBron James nor Kevin Love need the ball in their hands, you know, to create stuff, which is great. I mean, LeBron James is a great slasher off the ball. He works the best in the post when someone is getting him the ball in the post. I mean, that's one of the places he's most dangerous. And Love, like, one of his downsides in Minnesota has actually been that he isn't great at creating off the dribble himself. I was just reading a really good post, and I'm blanking on where it was. I think it was Waiting for Next Year, which is the Cavs site, which is talking about looking at a very thorough statistical profile of Kevin Love, and talking about how his shots were assisted at a really high rate compared to most star level players, compared to Irving, compared to James, compared to any of those guys. Like, he's well over 50% of his shots are created by assists, because most of his shots are either happening, you know, down low in the post, or they're happening at the 3-point line. And in neither of those situations is it a place where he's getting by himself with the ball. So, you know, to some extent, like, it'll be interesting to see how Love's game shifts, like how much it shifts either, you know, more into the corner in some sense, you know, if he sort of takes on some of that Chris Bosh, like, baseline, you know, Bosh extended himself out to the 3-point line a little better, but he takes some, maybe he, you know, works a little bit more on that baseline mid-range J that spaces things when LeBron is down low. That will be interesting. You are dealing with the fact that you have a bunch of high usage players all coming together on a team, and somebody's not going to get as much usage as they're probably used to. But, you know, the optimist in me feels like most of those players understand that being more efficient is going to be better for you. I mean, we're not talking about Monte Ellis or you, even Monte Ellis, right? Like, last season,
he was such a high usage guy. Year, yeah.
Yeah. And he suddenly got into a system that worked for him. So, I mean, there's a lot of question marks, you know, with the Cavs. We don't, in both of these cases, this is the other thing that's getting, you know, sort of glossed over, is that with both the Wolves and the Cavs, you've got new coaches, you know, and it's just, you don't know, we don't know anything about, especially David Blatt. Like, he's never even coached in the NBA before. I mean, I'm really high on him. I'm really optimistic that he's going to figure out. He seems really smart, and, like, he really understands how to use the personnel he's got, and isn't so dogmatic as to say, like, this is the system we're going to run. We just don't know how he's going to adapt to it. We saw LeBron go to the Heat, and it took them a couple of years to really develop a system that made the most of him. Now, hopefully, Blatt, you know, learn from that. But now you've got to make a system around LeBron and Kyrie and Love. So it's just hard to say. You know, Flip, people, you think you know what Flip has done before, but he hasn't really coached since a lot of that revolution happened in terms of, you know, the value of three-pointers and things like that. His system was very mid-range oriented, but that was during a time when the game itself was mid-range oriented. So it's kind of hard to know what either of these teams is going to look like, just because of it, even more than the personnel, like, the coaches are new coaches. So that'll be interesting.
But the good thing is that the East has become way more intriguing this offseason.
Yes.
Yeah, Chicago, definitely. You know, yeah. So who do you, just a real quick, just for my own enjoyment. So if you are picking the East, and obviously the Paul George thing has dramatically changed that landscape, I think, in the sense that I still thought the Pacers had a chance to be out there in the top 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they'll, I mean, they may still make the playoffs. But anyway, So who do you kind of see if you're picking right now, which is obviously way too premature, who do you pick to come out of the East?
I mean, I feel like the Cavs and the Bulls are right now at the top of that pecking order. The Bulls maybe have a little better shot just because they've consistently been in the playoffs with the players they have, minus Derrick Rose, and they're hoping that Derrick Rose comes back and is Derrick Rose. If he is, which some of the indications from USA Basketball seem to be that he is, then I sort of have to figure them as the favorites, just because I do think that chemistry is something you can't force together, and that the Cavs might take a little longer. But I definitely think you're looking at the battle for the 1-2 seed in the East between those two teams, and then one of them coming out. I still sort of feel like the Pacers. I think the Pacers are still going to make the playoffs. I mean, you still have to remember the bottom of the East was, you know, the Bobcats and now the Hornets, who, you know, they're fun, but I don't know if getting Lance Stephenson, you know, moves the needle that much for that team right now. So, you know, I still think the East is it became a little less consolidated, and you spread out, you know, you've moved some stuff around at the top. I still think the bottom, I mean, still think the Sixers are probably going to be, you know, not very good. The Magic are going to be not very good, not playoff teams by any means. But I do think it's between the Bulls and the Cavs essentially at the top of the East right now. And I don't think, I mean, I think the Heat are going to have trouble, but I think some people might be surprised by how well they actually maintain, even without LeBron. I mean, they'll be a very different team, but Spoelstra has learned a lot and shown himself to be very adaptable. And I think that people are going to realize how much Bosch has learned playing on those teams the last several years. And I think he's going to be able to leverage a lot of his skills into being a really good player for them. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Heat makes some noise still.
Yeah, and I still think that the Heat, it's going to be one of those things with Bosch where everybody remembers how good he was. You know, like for some reason he was just – everybody kind of forgot that he was actually a really good player too.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be good. So let's transition a little bit. I want to talk about, since we are a Thunder podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about some Thunder stuff. Matt Moore from CBS Sports. And I think he's also in that Hardwood Paroxysm. Am I wrong?
Yeah, he's the founder and editor emeritus, I believe. I don't remember exactly what saying. he's the blog father, is what we all refer
the
to.
The blog
father, Hardwood Paroxysm. So yeah.
Well, he wrote an article. It was a really, really good article. We felt, and the title was "What Was the Real Problem with the Thunder Last Season?" And he talks about James Harden and coaching and veterans, and then he comes to the conclusion about the Spurs. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that and kind of give me maybe your overall thoughts, if you agree with that statement or what he said and kind of concluded in that article, if you had some things you wanted to add to it. What are your thoughts on it?
I thought it was a great article. It comes to a conclusion that is a little bit existential and maybe a little bit hard to grasp when we're used to sort of sports takes. I mean, like, you know, there's your hot sports takes where people, it's just all about character and moral and, you know, like who plays the right way and all this stuff like that. And then there's like the sort of more advanced sports takes that have to do with like really digging into the numbers and taking apart, you know, the advanced analytics and figuring out the margins and the, you know, the wiggle room the teams have. I liked that Matt sort of ended up in this place where he was essentially saying it's basically as simple as the Spurs were just like an all-time great team last year, and especially in the playoffs. I mean, to watch the Spurs in the playoffs last year was, I mean, you were watching just, you know, basketball art. Like it was just amazing to watch. And it's one of those things where it's a natural tendency for any team and then any fan base to look into, you know, a team that they feel like didn't achieve what they wanted and say, what can we change? But you know, he sort of ends up by saying that, you know, the Thunder's young players are going to keep getting better. Some of the pieces that are, you know, were maybe a little bit problematic at times, like Derek Fisher is gone, and eventually Kendrick Perkins is moving on. You know, like that's going to change without you having to do a whole ton of stuff. And that doesn't necessarily make fan bases excited to say that what you need to do is just be patient and wait and continue to develop. But I mean, I agree that I think the Thunder are in a great position. I certainly think out West, they've still got, you know, if you're looking at Ibaka, Westbrook and Durant as your core, there's been a lot of discussion about how that matches up against Kyrie and Love and LeBron. I think that might be it. You know, if something, the Spurs had everything go right for them. I mean, they did everything correctly, but they also, you know, nobody had serious injuries. There's a lot of things that went really well. something could go wrong for the Spurs next season, and I could easily see the Thunder being in the finals, you know, against the Cavs, which would be, who wouldn't want to watch that matchup? Like, that would be amazing. So, you know, I think that there's certain elements. You always want to be doing things to try to make sure you're doing stuff better, but there's just really no guarantee that any one thing you do better is going to put you over the top against a team that's as well put together and coached and run as the Spurs are, which is can be frustrating. But I would like that Matt, you know, was like, that's just kind of how it is. Like you sort of have to deal with either be okay with that or just be okay with the fact that you're not okay with that. There's not a ton that you can do unless you, you know, go Mo Sizlak and try to take a crowbar to Tim Duncan's knee or something. You know, it's like, you know, like there's not that much you can do unless you're trying to literally take apart your opponent, you know?
Well, and I eventually, with Tim Duncan, I eventually thought that Father Time would do something to that order. Like at some point you thought he would slow down, but he looked as good in the finals as he's looked in a decade.
Yeah.
And so there's just something going on in San Antonio. But, you know, they do have, I know that, isn't it, I almost said Gary Neal, but you have Patty Mills that has a pretty significant injury and he's going to be out for a while. And so, you know, who knows what happens going in the next offseason, but it's especially here in Oklahoma, man, that our sports talk recently has just been the Thunder didn't do enough. And well, they're kind of trusting the system that they've already set in place. And and it's just hard to think that way. And so, but I thought that article that Matt wrote was really, really good. And maybe calm people down is more of my hope.
It would be the first time in history that Matt Moore ever calmed anyone down, but he tends to invite a lot of, caustic responses. But no, I particularly appreciated his defense of Scott Brooks, who's somebody where, I mean, I don't think Scott Brooks is. I'm sort of at the camp where I don't necessarily think Scott Brooks is the best possible coach, for that group, but I'm totally on board with the fact that he's done amazing things for that group in terms of a lot of stuff that you can't see. We look at things on the court that we think are shortcomings for him, but I think in terms of getting guys to buy into the vision of the team, in terms of developing the chemistry, like the guys like him on that team, like that stuff can't just be, you know, swept under the rug. You know, that stuff is very important. And so you could get rid of Scott Brooks and bring in somebody new, but you don't guarantee that you wouldn't lose a whole lot of stuff that you don't even realize that you've got right now. So, you know, calling for Scott Brooks's head is maybe, you know, premature or not completely thought out. Not that I don't think that there's shortcomings to the way he coaches, but, I think he is kind of at this point underappreciated in a lot of ways. So,
yeah. And nobody, I mean, there hadn't been a lot of coaches that have been as successful as he has over the last few years. Now, not a lot of coaches also have two out of the top, you know, six or seven best players in the league but it is something to where, especially around here, he is just criticized like crazy and a lot of times by me. And so I understand that.
I'll criticize, you know, it's like, I mean, I had problems with Adelman last year and it's very tough because he's a legendary coach. You know, should be in the Hall of Fame easily when he's done. He's one of, you know, the best coaches to ever coach in the game. But it was just at a point in his career where I think it was kind of winding down, and whether he wanted to acknowledge that or not, I just don't think, you know, he was totally 100% there. And it's very hard to say that when you also have to make clear that you have a tremendous amount of respect for this person. But, you know, it's like, it's part of our job is to sort of call some of those shots when we see them. So
were there any big moves, just kind of as a closing question, any big moves that happened this offseason that you feel like really kind of shifted anything outside of Cleveland and Minnesota? Like any other moves that you felt maybe in the West specifically that you thought were pretty significant moves?
Well, I mean, I've watched with interest what's going on in Los Angeles, not because I think it shifted the power of the Western Conference, but it's, you know, there's a certain part of me I feel like in the last several years as I've moved into writing professionally about basketball, I've lost touch a little bit with the kind of visceral fan part of me. Like I don't have that same like rah-rah feeling about the Wolves that I had at one time. And, you know, it's like I just spend so much time looking at them and analyzing things. It's just the some of the emotion has gone out of it. But I still have like the remains of my like visceral Laker hate, extending back to like – extending all the way back to Kobe and Shaq beating Iverson's Sixers, you know, way back in the day. And so to watch them, you know, signing Carlos Boozer and talking about how great it is, it's just, I'm kind of like, so like, you know, it's like, and then just to like the Laker fans who are like, you know, Jeremy Lin, Kobe, Jordan Hill, Carlos Boozer, and Nick Young is one of the best starting five in the league. I'm like, okay, like, good luck with that. Like,
yeah.
So I feel like some of those moves are, it's interesting. And I, you know, like I certainly don't bet against the Lakers spending a whole lot less time at the bottom than a lot of teams do, you know, like my team, say, if I'm going to go back to the fan feeling, you know, like the Wolves have obviously been down at the bottom for a long time. I could, you know, the Lakers will turn around if they can turn around, but it's just great to watch all these press conferences and being like, yeah, this is, you know, Carlos Boozer, we're super happy to sign him. Like Jeremy Lin, you're like, okay, none of this stuff is really, yeah, it's not as marquee as you're acting, you know, so
reach in a little bit for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, as far as the other, you know, like, I don't think there's been anything that's made me feel like the power dynamic has shifted dramatically. I really like Carter going to the Grizzlies. I've always really been a big Vince Carter fan, and I've really liked watching his game evolve into this kind of like six man role that he's taken on. And the Grizzlies are another team where last season they suffered for a lot of the regular season without Marc Gasol. And then when they got him back, if you just look at their record, you know, well, they were sort of a complete team, like to go full squad, like David Lee was saying last year. Like, you know, when they had sort of their guys, they looked really good. And I think they had, you know, they might have ran into some trouble continuity-wise in the playoffs because of that. But, you know, you add a little more firepower in terms of Vince Carter as an offensive player, who will help them out with shooting and things like that. Like, I like those moves for the Grizz, I think, also. So I'm interested to see that.
It feels like a lot of times with teams, especially teams that made the playoffs, that the little moves are the ones that are the most, like, as much as we've looked over the Anthony Morrow look as far as, well, we had a chance for Powell, like, that could be something that come the end of the season could be an incredibly important pickup that they made this offseason.
Oh yeah, definitely. Anthony Morrow is like, there's a couple guys out there who seem weird to me in that they always seem like they should make a bigger impact or should stick around on teams, and they don't seem to do that. And Anthony Morrow is one of those guys. And maybe it's just one of those situational things. Ed Davis is another one of those guys where it's like, they should be really good and they even look really good, but for some reason they keep getting moved around or, you know, dropped and then re-signed in other places. Like Morrow is, you know, he's a great shooter. You know, he's a decent defender, you know, in a league where 3-and-D is kind of the thing for a lot of wing players. Like he gives you some of that. I mean, not, maybe not on an elite level, but I think it could be a good pickup. And again, you're totally right that it's like, a lot of times in these, as you get into the playoffs, if you're talking about teams that are going to stick in the playoffs, a lot of those marquee guys are in some ways going to sort of like offset each other, you know? Like, I mean, that's one of the interesting things specifically about the Thunder Cavs stuff is that literally at every position where they're great, the other team is great, right? I mean, that's like the point guard, small forward, power forward are like the points of emphasis for both of those teams now. So, you know, those guys on the fringe, you know, you're the sort of Robert Horry, Derek Fisher, the Sasha Vujacic, like these guys who have these moments in the playoffs where they can do a bunch of Patty Mills last season, right? You know, like, I mean, the Spurs are built to make those guys ready for those situations, which is one of the great things about the Spurs that doesn't get talked about as much, because they talk about, you know, they rest their starters as a way to get their starters, you know, like have them have legs in the playoffs. But I think Popovich definitely also rests the starters specifically to say to the bench, all right, now is the time where you guys step up. This is your chance to get a bunch of minutes, you know, to play on the road, to start. And so then when the playoffs hit, like they, you know, it's a little easier to go to those guys and be like, hey, can you carry us for a little while? So I think that it's like a two-headed strategy, which works out really well for the Spurs. So any team that's looking to go deep into the playoffs, if they can get guys on the bench who will give them, you know, quality minutes during the regular season, that preps them for the playoffs, I think, and to be big on that big stage.
I absolutely agree. And you know, it's just exciting, man. I think this is going to be a lot of fun as far as the basketball season, and the Cleveland-Minnesota thing really makes that even more exciting. And I really don't. I'm not like, you know, not that you need this consoling, you know, anything. But Minnesota, they're going to be fun. Like I know that Taylor, one of our podcast guys, is more than likely lean towards him now as his league pass team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be league pass fun. I mean, I think that both the Cavs and the Wolves, you know, I mean, the Cavs are probably going to be on TV a good amount, I would say. But, you know, like the Wolves, I think it'll be fun to see. Like, I think that one of the under talked about so far things with this move is that I think you might see a lot different Rubio, who is a lot different next season, and not necessarily, I mean, not necessarily in terms of like literally on the basketball court, like somehow, I still don't think he's going to be a terrific shooter or anything like that. But in moments where he sort of stepped up over the last several years, either when Love's been out with injury or, you know, right when he's come back, when Rubio came back from injury or when Rubio was like a brand new rookie and he really galvanized the team and sort of was this like emotional touchstone and he was having a great time and the team was having a great time. I think, you know, as a guy who knows his place and is you know, he's hasn't had a lot of NBA experience, but he's had a lot of professional experience. He knows to defer to the guys who are, you know, the veterans. And so he deferred a lot to Love, I think, as a leader. And I don't think Love was ever like a vocal, emotional leader. Again, he had sort of that quieter lead by example thing going on. So I think you might see Rubio really step up as a kind of, not like face of the franchise in terms of, you know, he's the talent. He's like the all-star. I don't necessarily think that's his ceiling, but I think he might become one of those point guards that's like, you know, running the show, and really how he goes is how the team goes. And when he's in charge, he can like make the team a lot of fun. And when he's having a lot of fun, then I think the basketball is better for the team that he's on. So, you know, I think that'll be an interesting thing to see is what Rubio looks like this season.
Yeah, that will absolutely be fun to watch. Well, that's all we have, Steve. We appreciate you joining us. And remember, you can follow Steve at Steventris. And we'll have to like post that or respell it or something. But we can follow.
It's like Adventurous, but Steve is in front of it.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Well, that makes sense. That helps people. But I still am not sure I could spell it. But we appreciate you being here. I want to remind you, as we do always, you can follow us on Twitter at the DD Podcast. Look for us online at Welcome to Loud City as part of the SB Nation. Also at downtodunk.com. We appreciate you listening. We'll see you next time.